Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
You gotta give us a shot.
You know what?
You gotta give us a shot.
Excuse me one second. Hey, whoever's got that, turn that off. Just turn that off.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Clapback Sports. I am your host, The Mage. Unfortunately, we had to take a week off last week because Murph had a medical emergency. So his sex transfer did not go as planned. So he had a follow-up appointment. So last podcast was missed. But Murph, you are back this week. So how are you feeling? I hope everything went well.
I'm pretty good, man. And I also got my vaccine, too, on top of that, all that surgery. So I did it all. It was a one-time thing, one-stop shop. So I'm doing pretty good, but I'm a little pissed off about some news I heard about the Giants here a couple hours ago now. But we'll get into that here a little bit later. And no, the Yankees are not good. So other than that, I'm ready for the draft. I told you earlier, Mage, I want to go to sleep for 2 weeks. So just kind of hanging out here in the wind, watching the Yankees suck. And arguing with you over who we're going to draft.
Well, now that you got the vaccine, you might be asleep for 2 weeks, so we'll see. And you know what? I'm really glad too, Murph, because normally you ruin the entire episode in your intro, so I'm glad that you only hinted to what you were upset about and not actually went into it. So
to be professional, we have a guest here.
Yes, we do, and we will get to that in 1 second. Tino, my man Tino. How are you, Tino?
I'm good. I feel like I'm better than Murph, mainly because the Mets – aren't playing games. Apparently God hates them. We have only played about like 6-7 games this season. It's not fun, but hey, you can't lose if you don't play, right? And right now we're winning and we're in first place. So I'll take it. I'm good on this side. DeGrom was supposed to start today. So, you know, whenever you don't see him, it's sad, but we're moving on. Draft season, boys. Draft season. I'm excited about it. And we have a guest. We didn't have a show last week and now we have a guest. So
we do have a guest. So it is my pleasure to introduce Sam from The Girl Who Talks Sports. Sam, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm like so excited to be here. This is going to be so fun.
We are excited to have you. You actually had our friend The Entertainer on. You did a show with him, who we do another show with called What Do You Say? Although Tino's been leaving me off of the episodes lately.
But they miss you. And everyone knows, subscribe to What Do You Say? All Mets content over there. Entertainer and Mets guy. But, you know, he's a Giant fan and he knows his stuff, too. And we were talking draft today, too. It's getting down to it, boys. It's getting down to
Sam
it.
Sam isn't interested in your Mets BS.
It's okay. I tried to transition it back. I tried to bring it back to Giants.
So The Entertainer did a show with you. He said, man, you know what? I did this show with this girl on Giants, and she does really good work. And right off the bat, I said, it's got to be Sam. And he said, it is. So I was excited to get you on the podcast. We have been connected for quite some time. So please introduce yourself. Tell everybody where they can find you and a little bit about the podcast.
Yeah. So my name is Sam Cardona. I'm the host of the Girl Who Talks Sports podcast. You can find me on all podcasting platforms and on YouTube as well, also at The Girl Who Talks Sports. The YouTube channel is fairly new. Within the past year, I created that to get more exposure and get my name out there a little bit more. But yeah, I really enjoy talking about sports. I love the Giants. I love the Yankees. Those are my two teams, but I'm a big football girl. I absolutely live and breathe NFL. It's everything to me, and I'm so excited. I wish I could sleep for 2 weeks like you guys are saying. Like, I just want to wake up on draft day and just, like, you know, be ready to go, you know.
So where can they find you? What is your at on Twitter if they want to follow you as well?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter and on Instagram at TGWTS podcast, which is just the acronym for The Girl Who Talks Sports, and I'm pretty active on both of them, so you can find me on Twitter and Instagram.
I actually saw that you were pretty excited. I guess you got shouted out or mentioned with Joe Burrow in one of your, you had something with Joe Burrow. I guess you got shouted out on a podcast or on a show.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. It was a, a Barstool podcast called The Dime Package.
Yep.
And I am obsessed with Joe Burrow. I really like, I just love watching him play. And my, I'll switch my Apple Watch right now, but my Apple Watch is a picture of Joe Burrow, like the background. And I sent it into the girls who do the Dime Package for Barstool Sports, and they talked about me on the podcast, and I was like freaking out about it because I was like, oh my God, they actually saw my tweet and they're talking about me having Joe Burrow as the background of my Apple Watch right now. It was crazy.
So I saw that. So you do get pretty active on Twitter, and you really do share your enthusiasm quite a bit. But why don't you tell everybody a little bit how your love for the Giants and the Yankees started?
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees were always my team. Like, I grew up watching the Yankees. I played softball as a kid and in high school and some intramurals in college. So that was, like, definitely the sport that I played. But, like, my whole house is a Yankee house. Like, we all like the Yankees. But in terms of football, I am the only Giants fan in my house, which everybody is something different. I was telling you guys before, my dad is a Jets fan. So, but he does root for the Giants.
I got to know how, though. How did this all go down? Because, first of all, thank you for coming to the blue side. But how the hell does that even happen? Because I'm going to be so disappointed if my daughter decides she doesn't want to be a Giants fan.
Yeah,
but not only that, too. So, Tino and I are Giants Mets fans, which people say is kind of an oddity. For you, too, you have a whole household that are Jets Yankees fans, which also doesn't necessarily mesh as well. That's also an oddity. So usually it's Giants, Yankees, Jets, Mets, but mm-hmm. you're in a household full of Jets fans.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, my dad just, he grew up a Jets fan, always rooted for the Jets, but never, like, went against the Giants. Like, he was a New York sports kind of guy. Growing up, you know, he was saying, like, you know, this is the Jets. They are not good, but we watch them anyway. And I was like, okay. And he was like, and then there's this other New York team that's blue that does win. And I was like, oh, that sounds like the better team to root for here. So I mean, and as a little kid, like, I'm not really sure, like, how to gauge this. My favorite color is blue. So I was like, I like the blue New York team rather than the green New York team. So I started rooting for them. And then, you know, they won the Super Bowl 2007, 2011. Like, that was pretty early on in my childhood. And I just stuck with it, you know, and now I'm like a diehard Giants fan. And my brother's a Steelers fan, too. So everybody's different in this house.
Oh, I love it, man.
I do like your father's explanation of it. He's like, here's the Jets. Jets are a bunch of losers. But there's this other team that wears blue that kind of wins games. So
yeah, that's basically it. And he was like, you know, whoever you want to root for, you root for. And I was like, I'm going to go with the team that's winning right now. And he was like, that's a solid choice. Because he told me my whole life growing up, he goes, the Jets is an acronym. It stands for Just End the Suffering. And that's how he lived.
I thought it was Just End the Season. Just end this. Well, I guess both play.
Yeah, both. No, he always told me it ends with suffering. So
there you go. Well, God bless your father, because he raised a smart girl, even though she didn't pick his team. So welcome to Big Blue, I guess.
Yeah.
See, the ironic thing too is my entire family was Yankee fans, so I actually chose to be a Mets fan.
Oh, wow.
Which, I don't know what that says about me. You know, does that say anything? Or,
you know, something I was thinking as she was talking, I was like, I think there's been moments in my life where I had the choice where it's like, yeah, there's this other team in pinstripes that, you know, wins World Series. And it's like, yeah, I guess at that point I could have went over, but this never happened. I don't know. I mean, I guess something's wrong with us. I don't know.
We're kind of like Sam's dad. We chose the suffering.
Yeah. We have to like it. I mean, but we are Giants fans, so at least we have some non-suffering. But, you know.
I might have you
not
all.
As late, balanced, not as of late. Right?
Yeah.
I might have you all beat, though, because half my family's Patriots fans.
Oh, no. Oh,
but
no.
So, but I still got bragging rights on them for life. They can win 18 more Super Bowls, but I actually, they weren't my family, but I was just with a friend, and his girlfriend's Patriots fan, and we're gonna get into this later, but she was talking about the Dan Edelman Eli thing, and I was just like, 10 years later, you're still fucking salty. I love the Patriots. I don't know what to tell you, but you're salty as shit, and you've won Super Bowl since. And we saw it firsthand this week. I guess Patriots fans are going nuts with the Eli stuff.
I don't get it.
Murph, to also elaborate on that, I was at a house party for the Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl, and there were fans that were actually cheering for the Eagles that were Giants fans, which I hated them more than anything else, because the thing was, how can you hate the Patriots? The Patriots gave us two Super Bowls, one phenomenal run. I mean, a historic season in 07, taking down an 18-0 team. How can you root for a division rival to win the Super Bowl just because you hate the Patriots? As a Giants fan, I have no reason to hate the Patriots.
I bet those
I have a reason to hate the Patriots. After this weekend, I have a reason to hate the Patriots because all their fans are delusional. I thought we were delusional at times. I thought, and we were talking about delusionalness in like different teams and sports. No, Patriots fans are going through some shit right now where they know they know it's all going downhill. And they're going down memory lane the wrong way. Like, I just don't know why they didn't roll out the red carpet for Wes Welker. Like, I don't get it. Like, you're choosing to die on the Julian Edelman hill, and it's sad. And, like, I feel bad for them because he's going to unretire and probably go to the Bucks, and they'll win another one. And Patriots fans are going to be even more sad because the way they tried to pick on Eli Manning this weekend was, just pathetic. And I'm over it. I'm over the disrespect. I'm over the disrespect for Eli, dude. It's enough now.
Can someone explain to me why this all got correlated? Because I went bonkers on that Patriots fan about it this week, but where did this start? Why did Eli get attached to Julian Edelman?
Allegedly, Eli could only go to the Hall of Fame. The reason people think Eli go to the Hall of Fame is because of his postseason success.
So that's where the correlation came, because Edelman's good in the postseason.
Because according to the postseason stats, Julian Edelman is as good as Jerry Rice. This is what the stats want you to believe, naturally, right?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think Edelman will probably make the Hall of Fame. That's me. Don't really care either way. Doesn't faze me either way. But correlating a quarterback to a wide receiver and also a quarterback that beat your team twice, I don't see it. I don't even see the point for an argument there. Like, it's not even – doesn't even make any sense, dude. I mean, if we're talking Amani Toomer versus Edelman, yeah, we can have a different discussion. But – a quarterback versus a wide receiver, I'm lost here.
I don't think he's going to get in because at no point – if you just look at the people who haven't gotten in, just with numbers and success, I mean, my guy I grew up on in Torrey Holt, Torrey Holt didn't get into the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, Julian Edelman. I mean, riding Brady's coattails just isn't enough. Like, quarterback, rings might matter. The fact that he won rings playing for the Patriots, it doesn't do a lot for me. And the MVP is great, but Deion Branch, I mean, he did it first. And there are receivers. There's a body of work before him of Patriots players and receivers that are like, he was interchangeable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Julian Edelman, and I don't want to shit on his career because I think he had a great career, but just not a Hall of Famer. That's all. Just,
I mean, if you think about it, though, like, would people be talking about Julian Edelman the same way right now if Tom Brady wasn't his quarterback for all that time? I don't think that would be – I don't think anyone would even be talking about him right now if he was not Tom's receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good point. And I know, Tino, you want to make this a nomination, so we'll get to that later on. But, I mean, you brought up the point that his wide receivers have been interchangeable. Wes Welker, Julian Edelman. I mean, Scotty Miller in Tampa Bay.
Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan.
The running joke has always been he favored the smaller white slot wide receivers. I mean –
Danny Amendola. Like, literally, the list goes on and on. Danny Amendola. It goes on and on. And so that – and he wasn't even the best one. And that's why I bring up Wes Welker. Because if Wes Welker did not get issues with concussions, no doubt a Hall of Fame receiver in my eyes. And so, like, I get the case. I think Edelman had a great career. But, like, if you're going to try to compare him to Eli, now the fucking gloves are coming off and we're going to dissect his career a little bit. It really was not that impressive from a receiver standpoint.
I think the problem is, too, is that you can't account for postseason success in Hall of Fame ballots, because sometimes some players like Julian Edelman have the advantage of those extra games that great wide receivers don't.
Yeah.
Right. But then I think that's where people are coming back with, well, then what makes Eli so different?
Bro, he played 19 postseason games in his career. 19. How is he not going to have a significant amount of numbers and leading categories? It's like, it's people's debate with LeBron in basketball. Of course he's going to have every finals record. He's gone there more than anyone else. And that's not a knock. It's not supposed to be a knock. But when you're talking those numbers, it becomes very skewed because he's been there more. So, I don't know. And look, here's my...
What is the most important thing in the NFL? What is the every player's goal? What is their goal?
I mean, rings.
So, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, the Hall of Fame should be based off of a little bit regular season, but if you did magic in the postseason, that warrants a Hall of Fame bid.
I don't know about that because it really depends. I mean, there are certain players that can get
going. Before you keep going, and I'm going to leave it off with this, if you're disagreeing with me, then Eli's not a Hall of Famer.
No, see, I disagree though, because Eli also has the regular season stats.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he has so the perfect question to this Hall of Fame, and I'm going to ask Sam this question then, right? Because it comes back to Eli Manning versus Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers had an outstanding career, wasn't able to do it in the postseason. You got to be able to weight the two at some point when you're taking this into account, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, when people are comparing Eli and Phillip Rivers, like, then people will bring up the Super Bowl thing. And obviously Phillip Rivers doesn't have any rings. So I think at the Hall of Fame, it's just so convoluted isn't the right word, but complicated that it's like, okay, like this is the things that these people can do, but they never made it to a Super Bowl. So like, does that mean that they're not any good? Like, no, that's not the case. So it's hard to distinguish, but the thing with Julian Edelman is that there were times where like he sacrificed like statistics to win games. Like he didn't go off and like run around or catch balls and like all this stuff just to get for himself. Like he had the same Patriot mindset that he was like, I'm not here for myself, I'm here for the team. So he was taking, you know, kind of sacrifices for the team to win Super Bowls and things like that, so that he, you know, that, and that affected the amount of statistics in the regular season. And then like what you guys are saying in the postseason, yes, he has that many statistics because he has been to so many because of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And I just don't think that if they were not in the picture, we wouldn't even be having this conversation about Julian Edelman, and he would have retired and people wouldn't have even noticed.
He also got suspended 4 games for PEDs. He's a cheater.
Yes.
Well, and he also participated in the deflated ball.
If he gets in, let's get Barry Bonds into the MLB Hall of Fame. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
and let's open the gate.
That's a good point, because in my opinion, the Hall of Fame voting is kind of fucked in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're picking a media representative from each city. Actually, New York gets 2. Don't even want to fucking know who ours are. But most likely, these guys covered these players for a majority amount of years and either loved them or hated them. And at the end of the day, I don't give a shit. Everyone loved Eli in New York. He was a media's dream. And actually, he was probably a little bit of a thorn in their side, too, because they could never get anything out of him. But at the end of the day, if we're going to make it media-based, lock. He's a lock.
Yeah, look, he's a lock, but Rivers is getting in too. Like, that's what I mean. I think Eli's rings makes his case for potential first ballot more of a thing. That's why when he retired, I said, I think he's a first ballot. No question, Hall of Fame. He's getting in the Hall of Fame. But 2 rings, 1 ring, okay, maybe not first ballot. 2 rings, now we're talking. And my thing with Eli, people forget 2011, but I do not. I don't care if our defense was on that PFF all decade, whatever. The defense was not the team that year. It was Eli and his comebacks, and that's without a doubt. And people say the knock on Eli is he was never top 3 or top 5 at his position. Maybe not to them. But that year, Eli, no doubt, that was his MVP caliber season, and he fucking showed out with a ring, whether he got the recognition or not. So you might not identify it, but 2011, if you really need a case for it, right there, right there.
Who's better, Dan Marino or Eli Manning?
I don't know. I didn't get to watch Dan play.
Neither did I, but I mean, I guess Dan's probably got the regular season stuff and Eli's got the postseason stuff. So, I mean, again, it's the same fucking argument, right?
It's really hard to compare people like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair. And again, right, so I'm looking at things here in terms of perspective as well. So, Eli Manning or John Elway?
depends. I think the case, like, I think Marino will probably be better, like, an all-around quarterback than Eli, like, in that case. But, like, Elway and him kind of did the same thing.
So the point that I'm making here is Dan Marino finished sixth on the all-time passing list with 61,000 yards. Eli Manning is eighth with 57,000. So 4,000 yards behind Dan Marino, but he's almost 6,000 yards in front of John Elway.
Yeah, dude.
I feel like it's also fair to factor in what year these things happened, because football was not the same when John Elway was playing versus, you know, 2011 Super Bowl with Eli Manning. And that's also like a huge thing, that it's like these guys weren't playing as hard. They didn't have the same facilities. They didn't have the same, you know, supplements and vitamins and all that kind of stuff. So that's also a factor as well.
Plyometrics.
Yeah.
You know, voluntary opt-out workouts that I'm pissed off about.
Didn't even get into that yet.
Oh, we will.
Yeah,
so, go ahead, Tino.
I had one more note on Eli's 2011 season. This is what I roll it back to. I always think of that clip of Belichick just saying, let him throw to Manningham, let him throw to Manningham. And in that point of the Super Bowl when he fucking did it, it's like, dude, that is one of the most boss moves I can think of. Like, you literally go to Belichick's choice and do what he did on that dime. People want to highlight Edelman's postseason. All right, if we're going to go down memory lane, Eli's is still better. So that's all I'm getting at. Eli's is still better.
Eli Manning is 14th on the all-time list for fourth quarter comebacks.
You know, you guys all haven't even said anything about with Eli. And this is what gets it for me. I believe, don't quote me, 266 straight starts?
The Ironman. Walter Payton Man of the Year too, man.
That shit is unheard of, dude. Unheard of.
And it would have been longer if we didn't have to Ben McAdoo.
And he also played through plantar fasciitis and a separated shoulder. So I don't want to hear it, man.
No joke.
All the things that aren't on paper are things that us Giants fans know about Eli. And I do believe that the Hall of Fame committee will see that. But the whole Edelman thing's stupid. It is what it is. They're still salty.
I'm going to blame this one on Tino for derailing the show notes, but
we don't have to talk about the trash ass Yankees.
Well, I was going to derail the show notes.
But I did want to ask Sam though, what made her get into podcasting and the Giants in particular?
Well, so actually it's funny, cause when I was in college, I joined the radio station and I did that for like 3 years. And when I graduated from college, I was like, I don't have any more airwaves to go on. And I was like, well, there's podcasting. So I just straight up just like one day decided, I was like, I'm going to start this podcast. And I started doing it. And I just bought like a $40 mic on Amazon and just started recording and doing all that stuff. And the Giants in particular, I mean, I've kind of only recently gotten into like focusing in on them a lot. Because when I started reaching out to people more and like getting guests on my show and things like that, I was reaching out to people who were Giants fans, because that's all the people I was following on Twitter and like all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and then I made friends with some guys who had a Giants show and they gave me their contact. So there's a bunch of episodes that are very Giants centric because of the guests that I follow on social media and things like that. But I definitely do like talk about more than just the Giants on my show. And I mean, I barely even talk about baseball, to be quite honest with you. I don't follow it at all unless it's the Yankees. I can't get into it the same way as football.
I understand that. I get it. As I get older, I appreciate baseball more, but it's good background noise. It's good working noise. I enjoy watching it, though.
But I think that what I love about football so much is that there is so much drama in it, like just between everything, like everything that goes on the NFL, off the field, on the field, free agency, trading, like everything is just so crazy. And baseball just doesn't do the same thing for me.
What's next? Am I going to bitch about the players?
Well, Murph, I thought you wanted to bring up, which was a perfect transition for the Yankees-Mets. But again, I have to hold your hand during this podcast and literally direct you and provide.
Here's my transition. The Yankees still have no pitchers. Their contact hitters aren't hitting the ball, so they're not going to win games. There's my transition. I got off Cashman's case a little bit because we weren't spending any money. It was taking forever to get DJ loaded up. Finally got that done. They started making some pitcher moves. You know, I didn't love what they did. I thought Kluber was either going to be hit or miss. Mm-hmm. Obviously been a huge miss so far. Teon, I thought was going to be better. Cole's little puppet. He wasn't bad his first start. He was horrible his second start. We have one guy in the rotation, and his name's Darren O'Day. We have nobody to come in and serve. Chad Green is absolute garbage.
Not it.
And you know what? The pitching's the pitching. We knew that that story was going to be the story of the year. But my whole thing is this whole big bat thing is just – I'm done with it, dude. It's time to tear it. I said to my best friend this morning, it might be time to tear it down, dude. You're not going to win in this game playing big ball baseball all the time. And the games we've won this year have been on the backs of Odor, Urshela. Glaber's been down, and DJ's been down. So if Glaber and DJ are down, your team's going to be down because they're your guys that are going to be on base every single time. And Urshela's been down until as of lately, too. So I think the Yankees fans are delusional.
You know, I think you might want to repeat that. I don't think Murph quite
heard
that.
No, I didn't.
He was ignoring it. Jay Bruce.
Yeah, dude. Well, so, like, that's a whole other thing with me, man. Like, you can talk about Aaron Hicks and the three spot as much as you want. It doesn't really bother me. It is what it is. A lot of teams do it. It's stupid. I don't get it. Judge hitting in the two. Soto hits in the 2-2. It is what it is.
Lindor.
I can get over that kind of crap. What I can't get over is, like, Boone will make a great lineup, and then he'll fucking put Jay Bruce in there. Where is it? Like, Glaber is not a shortstop. And they go out and get a second baseman in our door. Why? No idea. But he's been fine for us, which is cool. I guess maybe to knock out the Red Sox or something, start a fight. Great. Probably the Rays, actually. But Jay Bruce is a classic Yankees move, man. DJ, you know, I hate taking the ball or hate taking DJ off third if we have to put him there in our show at second, but like, or at short, but it's the best lineup. It's the best lineup.
My take on the Yankees.
And then they sit Clint Frazier, who's actually hitting.
I just think the Yankees were about to blow it up before Gary and Aaron Judge kind of bursted onto the scene. They had their worst years.
And when we talk about Gary, fucking teams being held together by Gary.
Samuel Gary Sanchez, man. He's laughing. I don't know if that's a good or a bad laugh.
I don't love Gary, but he's leading the team in homers right now, and he's playing okay. So, like, that's pretty fucking pathetic.
The whole thing with Gary is just like, you know, the second you put a little fire under his butt, all of a sudden he's hitting homers left and right. You're like, hey, if you don't do well this year, you're gone. Like, this is it. It's over. And now all of a sudden he's playing fantastic. And I don't want him to be like overrated. I don't want this to be like very short and, you know, just a spurt of energy. But the thing, like, I do like Gary. I think that he's cool, and I think that he's kind of fun, and he's a good, decent catcher. To be quite honest, I'm really feeling Higgy. I really like him.
It's especially just so funny that Sanchez gets benched and Higgy comes in and hits two home runs.
When we were watching the Toronto game a few days ago, and he hit those two homers, I was like, I love this guy. He's awesome. And he's just doing his job. Like, he's just doing what he needs to do, which is really great. And the other thing that really bothers me about the lineup is Stanton. I don't want him anymore.
You don't have to get me started. We're not even going to go down.
The man has done, like, the second he finally like hits a home run or hits a ball into the outfield, I'm like, wow, there's another dollar that we actually have spent on the man. Like, it's so frustrating to see like him at like finally like doing something, but we've had him for so long and he was so expensive, and it's just
and we still have him for so long.
Eight more years, baby. He's not doing anything, and like you were saying before, we can't win all these games just off big bats. It's not how the game works.
We probably have the most controversial outfield in NMLB.
Well, Murph, exactly that you would know this. You'd probably watch the game. That Toronto series, Judge doesn't dive for a ball in right field, or he plays it shitty. Biggio ends up getting thrown out at home. It was a triple. Could have been an inside the Parker, but he didn't come in on it the right way because he was hesitant because of his injuries. And so, all right, if you transition that to later in his career, okay, you already can't play the outfield or move as well as he wants to because of injuries, well, then what's he going to have to be? A fucking DH. But you can't have him at DH because you already have a DH. So it's like, what are you going to do?
You're talking about Judge?
I'm talking about Judge, yeah, in right field.
For me, all Judge is a defender, dude.
But he's hurt. He can't even.
I know, but like that's, in my opinion, his biggest strength. If he's not.
All I have to say is that as a Mets fan, it's good. Feels good because I remember when the Yankees got Stanton, it was endless amount of World Series championships to come for the Yankees, and they've imploded. And now you guys are sticking to the luxury cap, no longer buying championships. And I really don't know what's going on. The Yankees at one point were really great at developing their farm system, somehow have gone away from that. But Tino,
I know exactly.
My fellow Mets fan. Hi, Tino. Hey, New York Mets baseball is back.
The first place New York Mets.
What we don't have a problem with. Dave Peterson didn't really pitch all that well for the first game, but wow, did he surely bounce back.
Yeah, 10 Ks for Peterson, man. Hey, look, the beautiful thing about last game was there was a hit and run by Rojas. We're 3-0 since Dom Smith is batting .300 in the lineup. Pretty simple. I don't know why Rojas decided to not start him. Our hottest hitter in the lineup is Brandon Nimmo. He's probably the best player in baseball right now. He's batting like .500, close to it. I think .480.
Absolutely insane.
And he was batting, I think, 7 or 8 in opening day. And then Dom Smith wasn't even in the lineup. So, you know, we'll just forget about that opening day because that was probably as bad as it could be. And we've come a long way so far. 5-3, onward and upward. And if you want to hear more Mets talk, what do you say? I don't want to rub it in their face, Maj. I feel bad.
Y'all aren't shit. You played like 5 games. And Mets fans have been going nuts even when you're winning fucking games. You have no closer, so you're fucked there.
Well, we have a closer.
Your expensive bats better come to life with Mr. Lindor batting .222.
We're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. You sound like a fucking Yankees fan.
He's fine.
You sound like a Yankees fan. We're good.
He had 2 hits. He had 2 hits. Y'all last game.
We don't need Lindor to be the guy because we have other guys, something that the Yankees don't have right now. So
your biggest worry when you get delusional like Yankees fans, it's gonna happen.
If your biggest worry is Lindor, the Mets are gonna be fine. That's all I have to say.
And Stroman's pitching well, but it's same old. We still can't buy Jacob DeGrom a win though.
Stroman's a mental midget. Once he's got to pitch a big game, he'll be fucked.
Luckily,
hey Murph, who's the best pitcher in baseball, Murph?
Jacob DeGrom, who's the second best?
Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole's been lights out. He's the only thing that's
Garrett Cole is really good.
Trevor Bauer.
Look, give us something.
Trevor Bauer's getting his ass rocked.
Give us something. And I like this because now I'm pissing you off. So I'm going to transition.
You are pissing me off because you're acting like a fucking Yankees fan.
No, get him more mad. Get him more mad.
I am going to get him more mad. Guess what, Murph? Like,
Murph. It's just it popped me kettle. Like, you hate Yankees fans, but you act like one.
Murph. Guess what, Murph?
What?
The New York Giants opted out of offseason workouts.
I can name more players that are at a disadvantage from that than an advantage. Julian Love, Darnay Holmes, Tay Crowder, Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, every single lineman on the team, Evan Ingram, Kyle Rudolph, Kenny Golladay, Adoree Jackson. Who am I missing, guys? Come on. I know there's more. There's more players missing out on these voluntary workouts.
Well, Daniel Jones did gather all his receivers in Arizona.
Great. Love it. But
Evan Ingram is also at a disadvantage since birth, but please continue. Go ahead.
All I'm saying is this shit isn't about the virus. It's a snowball effect. One team does it, and if a team doesn't do it, then they're going to be blackballed. On top of that, this has nothing to do with the virus, man. They've been asking for this shit to be canceled for years before COVID. They've been asking Adam. I mean, dude, you could go all the way back to OCU Mindora when he didn't show up to mandatory train or voluntary workouts. And for a team like the New York Giants, who are one of the top 5 youngest teams in the NFL, doesn't benefit us. There's no argument that you can make that says that this benefits us in any single way. And to me, that's pure laziness. I get it.
Bruce Arians said that the vets are obviously in favor of this. He doesn't like it because it stunts the growth of his rookies. There's no development there. And the vets love that because guess what? The rookies can't take their starting positions. So if this is a matter of the union standing together and giving the players what they wanted more than is COVID, and I agree with you on that. But, Murph, you did think that the Giants would be the one team to
defy that. You took my next thing. It's funny as shit that our show notes literally say, teams opting out of voluntary workouts and why Murph thinks the Giants won't. Big fat L for me, so I'll take Clown of the Week nomination if need be. But I really thought, you know, Joe Judge preached this team opting in his opening press conference. I can't imagine this makes Joe Judge happy, dude. I really can't. I understand that he probably gets it, but I don't think it makes it happy. What do you, or makes him happy? What do you think, Sam?
I think that this whole thing is just the problem I have with this is I'm thinking of what happened last year when they couldn't all get together because of COVID. This is, we're in a very different April than we were last April. This, when you're saying that has nothing to do with COVID, this absolutely has nothing to do with COVID. People are getting vaccinated. Things are opening back up again. This is not April as it was last year when everyone was walking around doing their quarantine walks, you know, like doing, you know, sitting at home, trying to figure out how to deal with their families. Like, this is not the same April. So the thing that I have a problem with this is the amount of injuries that came out of last season because they couldn't do anything because they physically weren't able to. The fact that now it is so possible for everyone to get together, practice, and we just had a whole NFL season. It was fine. Everything was fine. The fact that they are like, I'm just so concerned about someone like Saquon, who's coming off of this injury, not doing the resistance training, not doing the conditioning, not doing the training he's supposed to be doing, and the people who could be doing things that aren't going to do it, and there's going to be another 15 torn ACLs next year. And that's what's really bothering me, is that I'm like, this has nothing to do with safety, COVID, nothing. People are getting vaccinated. Everything is fine at this point in time, for the most part. I mean, things could go awry, but I just, that's what's really bothering me, is the amount of people who could get hurt because they're not practicing. I'm sure they'll practice by themselves or whatever, but it's not going to be the same as if they're practicing with a team.
Can I provide a hot take right now?
What?
I'm going to provide a hot take.
Okay.
All right. That announcement was nothing more than just an announcement. That's it. If you tell me that guys aren't in and out of that building this offseason, I'll tell you that you're lying.
Well, I asked you that earlier, though, Mesh. I thought, is this no one's allowed in, or is it truly optional? Because to me, an opt-out is it's canceled.
No, see.
So, because like I had people coming out of my head being like, well, Danny's still going to show up. People are going to still show up. And I get that, but that's normal procedure. If you live in the area and the complex is open, you're probably going to work out at the complex, unless you're a guy like Matt Purd that lives local with Will Hernandez and they're working out at a local facility. They're going to take the free facility every single time, and they're going to go train with their boys, and they're going to go train with their coaches. So I guess that's, and I can't speak on it because I'm not sure. Does this mean that no one's allowed in? Because I know they've been very strict about competitive edge. You know, I know, like, you know, wasn't it before all COVID, wasn't it like all coaches get to come 2 weeks earlier and stuff? So I know there's like small rules in there. So is this truly an opt-out, or does this just a fancy word for saying it's still voluntary?
What I don't understand is, why are they doing this? Is it just because they don't want to practice? Like, that is such a 13-year-old mindset. Like, you know, when you're a kid and you have to go to practice after school, that's, yeah, like, I don't want to go. But this is your job. Aren't you supposed to be training your bodies in order to make yourself better for your job? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, what is the point of all this? Just because of COVID?
This is their, in my opinion, this is their way out. They've been battling this since the lockout. It's been something that the vets have been wanting. They want more time with their families. They want to live in California, even though they play in New York. And I get that. But for teams like the Giants, what do we got, 5 vets that could take some time off? Everyone else is at a disadvantage, in my opinion.
So then what they should do is make a time frame that if you've, you know, played for a certain amount of years, you can voluntarily do it. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to go. But if you're under, you know, like 3 years or 4 years, you have to go. That
it's
should be
already
the rule.
Voluntary. I guess that's my biggest concern is like they already didn't have to come, but
yeah,
since
so what's the
they
point?
Set because they want these this they want these completely eliminated from the program, and players want they want a complete virtual offseason. And so, you know, as a normal working employee, I want to work from home every day too, but like I'm not getting paid $5 million a year.
So, Sam, I don't know if you listened to a podcast before. The one trouble that we have is Murph. Sometimes he asks the same question three times, and then when you think he's done talking, you go to interject, but he's not done yet. He goes on for another 5 minutes. So I love Murph, but I have no idea when he's done. But so the thing about this is it's a unifying together because the NFLPA is a union. Right. So the minute that one team opted out, this was going to always be a snowball effect because they have to show, even if they're not, they have to show that they're unified against the NFL.
Right.
So when there comes negotiations later on, it's a ploy. Like Murph said, this is something that they've been wanting to get rid of for quite some time. So the minute that the Tampa Bay Bucks opted out, who was the next team?
Broncos.
The Lions.
Yeah, Broncos and Lions.
Okay.
And the Bucks are the only team in the
Seahawks. Giants.
Yeah, Seahawks.
But, yep. Yeah, so and then the Patriots and the Giants. So the minute that one team did it, they all had to. Otherwise, it would look like that there's some sort of, you know, discontent amongst the union. And they can't have that next time that they go into negotiations. However, coming back to your point, Merv, I do believe that there are some people that do want to get into the office. There are people that, even if it may not be at the practice facility, Coach Chaos, Patrick Graham, I know he's talking to Dory Jackson. They're probably still meeting up or whatnot. It just may not occur at 1925 Giants Drive. Do you know nothing? Cool.
Yeah, man. I had to go get water there. I had to quench my thirst. Quench my thirst. You guys got me hot. You're delivering hot takes after hot take. What do you expect from me? You know, I got to dehydrate. No, man, look. I felt this way last year. I think Sam hit it on the head, actually. I was thinking, like, maybe she read my mind there for a sec. I mean, my feeling on all this stuff is those injuries. That's really it. And I think it puts the young guys at a disadvantage more than anything. But my only joke was the Evan Engram thing, because it's true. I mean, other than Danny getting acclimated in the offense more, depending on what they're doing, I mean, I really have no question marks for this team. So aside from that is health. I want my guys to get reps. I want health. But as long as we're having preseason games, which we're supposed to have, I don't care about the OTAs as much. If we have no preseason again, I may lose my fucking mind, though. I actually might, like,
go. I've never seen Sam upset, but she made a face when you said Evan Engram.
No, yeah, it's gross. No, I don't mean to.
I can't stand that guy.
It's terrible.
Do we need to, like, turn this around and be like Evan Engram stands so when he goes off, we're the only smart people?
No. I've talked so bad about Evan for so long. I don't think I can even go back on it. Honestly, I was okay with it for a while. I was like, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But I can literally picture the exact moment where my entire just demeanor just switched on him. It was Thursday Night Football versus the Philadelphia Eagles, and he missed that final beautiful spiral by Danny Dimes. Like, beautiful. It was right there, and the man dropped it. And I was like, we had this game. This game was ours for the taking, and he messed it up for us. And the next day, I drove to South Jersey to be with my Philadelphia Eagles friend, fan of a friend, like, who she, and I was like, I can't deal with this. And
that was
she
was the last
like,
straw for you. That's what it, for me, it was, I think I lasted 3 weeks. I know Chicago, I blame that interception on him, but we were still under the idea that it's all Danny's fault and he turns the ball over too much and so on and so forth. And then it rolled into week three when we played the 49ers and he botched the toss, the reverse, and
literally like the second play of the game,
and Danny got credit for the fumble and we got
blown. Yes, he did.
That was our worst loss. He got credited for the fumble. That was our worst loss. And all the hot takes came out. Turnovers, Danny. Oh my God. It's like, you guys clearly aren't watching these games. But I knew eventually Evan Engram, if you wait long enough, he'll reveal his true self. And Philly, he definitely revealed his true self. There are more times than that he revealed his true self. Washington, he dropped a touchdown in Washington. That was beautiful. I think both times we played him, it was in the red zone. Not great. In Washington, he made a decent play, actually, if I remember correctly. One. I'll give him one. But, yeah, not great.
I spent $300 to see that historic drop in Philly and almost stepped in human shit on the sidewalk on the way back to my hotel. So try to one up me now, boys and girls.
Maybe you ever,
but I think that's a good transition because at this point in time, I'm really thinking we could use a Ryan Ramczyk.
And alluding to what?
That we should have never fucking drafted Evan Engram and we can't fuck this number 11 pickup.
I actually was talking about this the other day. Taking a few picks behind him, I don't think we were ever tied to him, but we definitely needed an end at the time. Was TJ Watt shortly after? I think four picks after. That's the guy I think if I look at that board and I would have wanted TJ four spots away would have been really nice. Really, really nice.
Odell Beckham over Aaron Donald.
Not great. Eli Apple over.
You're going to stay muted for that. No.
Aaron Donald's in a bit of a pickle now anyway, so.
I don't know about that. Did you see
the picture of that guy's face?
Yeah, but it's been said on Twitter. Like, I mean, if that guy's got to be a moron, who looks at Aaron Donald and says, I can take this guy?
Yeah, to be fair, the man is literally like the wingspan on him is terrifying. I don't know why anyone would even try to do anything with him, but
somebody said he was holding on to that for like 4 years though.
No, it happened like
I did see that.
I thought it happened like last weekend.
Oh, premeditated. Add a couple charges.
I didn't look into it. I'm not 100%.
Well, I saw the same thing you did too, Murph. I saw that was an incident that occurred a while back as well.
Dug all the social media. Well,
look, I think if anything, guys, you're looking at this the wrong way. I think if anything, his stock's going to be booming because you can judge a lot about a guy based on his fights. Last year, I faded Dallas Goedert solely based off him getting knocked out in a bar, and it actually was a pretty good idea. So by that logic, Rams D first off the board in fantasy. Probably they're going to win the division. I mean, might not be stopping him at this rate.
Still I would the say second best player in the
division
NFL.
Now, though. It's a real tough division right now, though.
Yeah, the West is really tough.
It is, and their landscape.
Do you think James Conner's going to do anything, though? Like, actually, do we think he's going to do
something? I do. I like Arizona as a fifth one.
Okay.
I think, you know, between him and Chase Edmonds, it could be a strong run game.
Why can't Conner do anything if he doesn't? If he stays healthy, why can't he do anything?
He's great.
I know that's a huge if, but, like, James Conner is a pretty solid running back, and the catch I'd be buying him.
Got to do with opportunity, though. They're gonna have a running back by committee. I'm just saying, I look at it from that. They got three horses there. So
who's the third horse? Three mouths to
be, Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds.
Kenyon's on the Raiders.
He's not on the Cardinals.
Oh, that's right. They gave him a big deal.
And supposedly he's playing wide receiver for the Raiders.
Oh, that's gonna be a disaster.
Okay.
I don't.
Shameless
know where
plug,
that came from.
Tino. You should also listen to the FF Shop. Where a new podcast I started for fantasy football along with Mr. Chris 172 and I Bleed Blue Forever. Look, we're full of shameless plugs on here. We have a lot of stuff going on. We got the Girl Who Talks Sports. We got Woody Shea. We got Clapback Sports. We got the Fantasy Football Shop. Murph, I don't know what else you're doing besides.
I have a question for Sam. I haven't asked her a question yet. And I've been waiting to interrupt the show actually from the beginning to ask you this. So Joe Burrow's on your watch. I'm sure you don't feel great about him dying last year. That was very unfortunate. And it looks like the Bengals may put their best efforts forward in killing him again if they don't draft a tackle at 5. What do you think they should do? Do you think they should get him his best bud in Jamar Chase or potentially take Sewell if he's there at 5?
I mean, I think that I don't actually know what the rest of the picks for the Bengals are, but getting Chase for him, I think would be good in just terms of the dynamic and then seeing what kind of tackles are down the line. But again, I don't know where else they're sitting in the draft, but yeah, seeing Joe Burrow go down that day, I won't lie to you. I sat in front of my TV with my hands over my mouth, like, no, this cannot be happening. I was so upset. I was texting my friend Jordan and I was like, she also loves Joe Burrow. And I was like, hey, this isn't real, right? We're dreaming. She was like, no, this isn't real. And then he got carted off and they were playing Washington, right? And
they would have won that game. I had the Bengals in that game. They were winning that game. And then Washington ended up coming back.
I think the season would have went a little bit differently if he didn't go out. And also in terms of offensive rookie of the year, I also love Justin Herbert, but I think Joe Burrow, if he stayed in the race there, it would have been different. But no, I think that just in terms of the draft, I think that especially with AJ Green gone now, like they need a star receiver at this point in time. And I don't think that they picked anybody up in free agency. So I would think that getting Chase would be better. And then going down the line to see, because there's always so much talent, especially in defense and offensive line, like people overlook them, I think. And down, you know, second, third, fourth round, there's still really great guys available. So that's probably what I would do.
I actually like that take. So yeah, I've been buying into that more. I was like, they got to get one at five, but because offensive line is so deep, I actually think they could address it in the second round. My thing with Chase, though, they don't have a lot of receivers, but Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins are a lot better to me than to most people. So I feel like they're good. If Kyle Pitts doesn't go to Atlanta, I think the Bengals got to take Pitts more than Chase. I think that would make a lot more sense, in my opinion.
Who is their tight end in Cincinnati? Do they have one?
No.
I don't even Uzma? Know.
Azuma? Yeah.
Azuma?
Maybe. It's not Eifert.
Yeah, I mean, they had – Ertz was linked to them for a while, but
– Oh, Drew Sample.
Drew
Sample. They're definitely upgrading the tight end position, in my opinion.
Yeah, if they could. But I think Jamar Chase. So there are three players in this draft who I think are can't miss. I think that's Trevor Lawrence, Kyle Pitts, and Jamar Chase. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I think everybody else presents some sort of question mark.
And Justin
Fields. It's crazy because we were talking about Joe Burrow on the fantasy podcast, and Joe Burrow actually threw 67 passes in one game, which is insane.
I think he rushed for a touchdown in that game. He might have.
I'm serious. He's throwing like 400 or 500 yards a game.
Yeah. No.
You're going to make me go on that whole rant about forcing these dudes into shitty situations. So I don't think we need to go down that rabbit hole.
Well,
they fucking set him up to fail, man.
Joe Burrow also didn't have his running back for most of last year either, and Joe Mixon. So, and we also saw, look, I mean, a lot of, as Giants fans, a lot of people like, oh, the Giants need to get another wide receiver. Daniel Jones, the only difference between 2019 and 2020 was the fact that he didn't have Saquon Barkley. Other than that, this was the same friggin' offense. So same wide receivers, same tight end. Offensive line, obviously, a little bit different. I don't know if it produced much differently, but the only difference was he was missing Saquon Barkley. What a difference Saquon Barkley makes on this team. And now that you added Kyle Rudolph – and Kenny Galladay, and possibly can get, and I don't want to ruin it because this is a question for Sam, but could get another wide receiver here. So let's transition, though. Sam, what was your reaction to the free agency spending spree? What was your thoughts on the free agent acquisitions, and where do you think this roster stands as of today heading into the draft?
I feel pretty confident in this. Let me tell you, when I found out we were getting Kyle Rudolph, I was through the roof. I was so psyched about getting him. And people were like, he's old. He's like 31. I'm like, I don't care. That guy is a phenomenal tight end. And he is like, that's what he is. He is a tight end, and he is going to do exactly what needs to be done as a tight end. And the only thing I remember from, I think it was the 2019 season, he had this beautiful red zone presence, and it's gorgeous, and I love every minute of it, and his wingspan is just immaculate, and he had this beautiful catch in the red zone, one-handed, out of bounds. It was fantastic. So when I found out that he was going to be our tight end, and the fact that I have talked about Evan Engram in such an awful manner for so long, I was ecstatic. And same thing with Kenny Galladay, but like that kind of like it didn't hit the same for me for some reason. But in terms of our free agency in general, I mean, we got some, running back depth with Booker, and we have, you know, now we have a tight end. We got Galladay as like our star receiver, which we needed. And if we weren't going to get him, we were going to, you know, draft somebody. So as of right now, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good. And we got John Ross too. So that just adds to our wide receiver depth as well. So, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good going into the draft. I was like, okay, I feel like we got what we needed, and now we have opportunity to get even more things that we need. And I think we have a solid spot in terms of our draft spot as well, because I know that you guys had mentioned it, like, you know, possibly moving around from the 11 spot. So I'm feeling pretty good, and I really like everybody that we got in free agency despite our spending. And I know that we were like basically poor for a really long time, so you know, it is what it is, but I'm pretty satisfied with what went down.
I like how you described all of Kyle Rudolph's stuff, like with beautiful. And I think you're right because he's a beautiful human being. I've already announced I have a man crush for Rudolph on this show, and it's okay. This is a Kyle Rudolph stan account. Clapback Sports is officially, it's a Ken Jones and a Kyle Rudolph stans account. And listen, especially because he's the anti-Evan Engram. I mean, he had me sold there, but then you mix everything else in there. I'm hyped about Rudolph, too. I thought that was a nice addition.
So y'all are excited about Rudolph. So now we have to play Giants trivia.
Let's do it.
How many TDs does Kyle Rudolph have in the last 5 years? It's pretty fucking impressive.
I have no
12.
Idea.
Not even close to that.
Way more?
Not even close.
23.
23. 12 is so
26.
Bad. 26.
Closest without going
in five
over.
Years. So
anyone that wants to go out there and say he was brought on to be a blocker is out of their mind, because what was Kyle Rudolph's one thing all year long in Minnesota? Every single time he got in front of a camera, he was bitching about his receptions. Mm-hmm. Kyle Rudolph didn't come here to block. Kyle Rudolph came here to do it all.
Well, Kyle Rudolph said himself, he's like, I don't know where I got this kind of blocking tight end label. I've always been known more of it as a pass catcher, and I developed my blocking as my career went along, but I came into the league as a receiving tight end.
He was a real Pro Bowl tight end, an actual Pro Bowl tight end. I was going to ask you, Murph, I don't know if you have the numbers up. I said 12 because I know last year he didn't really have touchdowns.
He only had one.
Yeah, so that's
why he barely played, because they were working Irv Smith in. But back to Major's point, the whole blocking thing came from Dalvin Cook. When Dalvin Cook was going off, they interviewed him after a game. And every single time Dalvin Cook would speak about big games, he would mention Kyle Rudolph leading the way for him. So I think that's where the blocking whole thing came from. But yeah, he came in the league as a pass catcher. I mean, he was a classic Notre Dame pass catching tight end that could block. And I mean, dude, he's been doing it since 2011. And I don't believe it. He said he had 16 other offers.
16?
Yeah. He said
that's
that in
half the league.
Maybe he said 12, but it was between 12 and 16. And it was a lot. I was like, wait, what? So he's a hot commodity.
I was really surprised when we picked him up. I was not even expecting us to even go near him. And when I found out that we did, I was like, okay, this is like a happy surprise.
Evan Engram isn't handed
shit. Well, the Giants were in on Hunter Henry.
Yeah. Yep. And when we saw
that was interesting to me.
We still don't cut Evan Engram. Why? I don't know. Why?
He's the media player of the year, man.
If you ever want to
get Madden 21 Pro Bowler,
Pro Bowl tight end Evan Engram,
Madden.
What did they name him? Like the Nice Guy Award or something? Doesn't he get the Media Nice Guy Award?
Oh, he did. I hope that's a real award.
Is that it
a
real is.
Award? I'm looking it up.
It's a real
and award. Duncan told us that on the podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Duncan told us that.
I don't know why I know this, but I know for a fact that when Nate Burleson was in Detroit, he won that award.
Oh, my God. They're giving out participation trophies now. Jesus.
So if you ever want to upset Tino, you could certainly do that in two words. Evan Engram.
It's a great joke. You guys are like, I'm literally dying.
The one free agent acquisition that you didn't talk about, and I'll transition that into something that Murph and I discussed today, but you didn't really discuss Adoree Jackson. Mm. You highlighted a lot of the offense. What do you feel about the addition of Adoree Jackson? And then should the Giants look at cornerback with the 11th pick now, being that we added him?
The thing is that, like, I don't understand why we would draft someone at 11. If you want to draft a cornerback at some point, I think that's okay. But you just gave Adoree Jackson $39 million. I don't think, with James Bradbury still on the roster as well, I don't see why we need to draft a cornerback at 11. You know, if you want to do it at 196 in the sixth round, 196 in the sixth round, that's fine. I'm cool with that. If you want to draft a corner, whatever. But don't use our 11th pick for that. We don't need an 11th pick corner. So I think that that's kind of stupid.
Wow, that's real interesting, Sam. Sounds like a conversation I had with somebody on this podcast earlier. Murph?
I can't tear Sam up. She's too nice.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to do it. But for everyone else, why can't we take a corner at 11?
But what would we – why do you need that many?
All right, hear me out. it's probably unlikely that all these wide receivers don't make it to 11. There's probably going to be one of them there. And I'm on the wide receiver train. I'm kind of off the edge train. Kwity Paye has been kind of intriguing to me lately, but I'm fully on the wide receiver train. But I always think with the worst than mine. I'm thinking that they're not going to be there. So if J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain are the best players available, why can't we sharpen iron with iron? We're going to be loaded on the back end, and this isn't for you, Sam. This is for Tino. He better be listening to. We're going to be loaded on the back end. We're going to have DBs on the field all the time. Why can't we take a corner there? If he's the best player available and we missed out on our other guys in the top 11 and no trade presents itself, why can't we take one of those guys over the edge rushers?
All right. Well, because that's different though. Like if you're saying that nobody's available, then that's different.
But I'm talking from a pure BPA standpoint and the wide receivers are gone.
There's got to be a balance between BPA need. This is the same thing that we talked about with positional value and need as well. So I mean, they got to be able to intersect at some point. I don't want to take away from Tino's point, but I mean, this is why I talked to you about earlier, Murph, right? If you spend the 11th pick on a cornerback, somebody's got to play nickel or slot. So you're either spending $39 million, as Sam had mentioned, on a slot cornerback, or you're spending the 11th overall pick on a slot cornerback. I mean, these rookies have to play in order to develop. I don't think I'm taking a position that's going to be a depth piece with the 11th overall pick. I'm just not. The 11th overall pick has to be inserted in the starting lineup and has to play. And you came back to me and said, well, Tom Coughlin didn't start rookies. But it's different. It doesn't matter. It's different. And if you're drafting the guy in the first round, unless you have the luxury, we talked about JPP. He had OCU Manure, Justin Tuck, and Matthias Kiwanuka in front of him. I mean, Odell Beckham. But Odell Beckham was hurt, started as soon as he was healthy. I don't get it. If you're spending the 11th overall pick, this guy better start.
So let me ask you this. We're on the board. Goes exactly how I'm saying it's going to go. Probably not going to happen, but y'all know I love situationals. Throw some names at me. All the wide receivers are gone. Slater's gone. Throw some names at me at 11.
Sewell's gone too.
Roseau? I feel like we could trade back and get him. And as of lately, it sounds like he's probably going to drop. But again, to Major's point, that's another guy that he shouldn't be on the field week one. He's a project. He's a guy that's probably going to need some time to develop, which I'm kind of cool with that because I feel like we don't need to draft exactly for need. But
we talked about this on the podcast, so I'm going to assume that.
Keep throwing names at me,
I'm going to assume that Penei Sewell's off the board.
Sewell's gone. Slater's gone.
Slater's gone. All the wide receivers are gone.
Yep. Do you really think all the receivers are going to be gone?
Murph comes up with unrealistic expectations.
I don't anymore because Mage talked this through to me, but I just like to kind of balance all the situations in my head, and that's just kind of what I've been on to help. It's probably because I've been on the wide receiver train lately, so I've been trying to think about situations where they're not available to us.
My whole thing is this. One, if you're at 11 and there's nobody that you consider where best player available meets positional need, you trade fucking back. That's what you do. But again, in your scenario, there's no trade backs, right? So now we're forced to take somebody. So is Micah Parsons here?
Yeah, I guess he's going to have to be. So,
all right. So then I draft Micah Parsons. If not, then I take Barmore.
It's just gotten to the point where there's probably like five guys, and it's most likely that one of them is going to fall to us. So
well, in your scenario, you got 18 wide receivers going with only 18 with 10 picks. Including offensive line and quarterback. So,
Parsons. This QB hype is very much helping us out in the wide receiver department. I will admit that. I mean, that every time the Panthers trading for Darnold put us back in the wide receiver race, in my opinion.
All right, so let's ask Tino and Sam what they're doing with the 11th pick in your asinine situation. Tino.
So I was just trying to build it up to this. So I'm trying to deliver a hotter take. So I actually – I think at 11, the way I'm looking at it, if Murph's dream scenario, right, literally no one's on the board. We're looking at top corners or like the Quiddy Pays and whatever's left, right? All right. So I think Darrisaw gets an extreme consideration from the Giants, in my opinion. I think potentially, don't be surprised if we go to the next nearest edge. I mean, Pay, sure, but Aziz is a guy I've really liked. I think this is going, if no one's available, they're just moving it back to the highest edge available and or lineman regardless. If they don't do anything, if we got to pick at 11, I still think you could trade back and get any of those guys and get value at those positions. But if they don't do anything, I still think they do that because they're not going to address a corner after adding a Dory. We have Darnay. Logan Ryan's there. We're paying James Bradbury. Our safeties are fine. We still have Julian Love. It's just a very condensed position. We just don't need another guy. So I don't think it's secondary, and we paid Galladay and Ross, so I don't think it's going to be receiver either. I think it's lineman through and through or DN through and through regardless, probably, unless it's a linebacker.
The only thing I would say to that, Tino, is that I don't think Darrisaw would be an option. I think Matt Peart's going to be a starting right tackle. I would say Vera Tucker could certainly well be an option.
Vera Tucker, I mean, I'm still on the move Matt Peart to guard, whatever it takes for him to get on the field train. So
hey, he's like 6'7". I don't see how you can insert him at guard.
Listen, I'm just saying I'm on the train for that. Listen, I want him to
get on. Can you not insert him when he fucking started 15 games of college at guard?
It's just different.
I want to throw out some names here because I really like them, especially Zavion Collins. I know he's the Giants are too early at 11. But I would really like if they traded back and potentially get him, but it's okay. We're not going to get him. He's going to go to a good team. He's going to be really good. But, yeah, Zavion Collins is a guy climbing my board. I think he's fucking nasty. He's coming out of Tulsa. People don't really know him. He's a beast. He's a linebacker. He's
down draft boards from what I've seen recently, though.
Yeah.
He was originally projected first-round pick. Now he's kind of borderline for a second.
It's probably based on his metrics. On the field, dude, he's really good. I mean, I've watched his tape recently. Beast.
All right.
Damn. In a wild draft scenario, where are you going at 11?
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, it's like, it's kind of hard to think because I like can't get my mind out of the fact that it's probably not going to happen. But I mean, I don't know. It's so like the thing that with our free agency is that we got like a little bit of everything. So like, I don't know what we need the most of. It's like kind of hard. I know you know you guys were mentioning linebacker, and I know that we were going to discuss Micah Parsons, but like, I don't know. It's the thing with the yo. Go ahead.
Not in Murph's fantasy world. Who do you want?
Just like in general.
General, just your pick at 11.
Probably Waddle.
I like
him. And I mean, my first thought before we got Kyle Rudolph was Kyle Pitts. Yep. And with Rudolph, I don't think that Pitts is going to fall to 11. And I think that Smith is not going to be there. Devonta Smith is going to get picked up before Waddle. Jamar Chase is going to get picked up before then. And I think that Waddle will be the last guy there.
Sam, I don't know if you had a chance to check out my recent mock draft because everybody loves the mage. Everybody checks them out on Twitter. But so here's my first 10 picks before the Giants. So Trevor Lawrence, 1. Justin Fields, 2 to the Jets. Zach Wilson, 3 to the 49ers. Kyle Pitts, 4th to the Falcons. Penei Sewell to your Joe Burrow, protect Joe Burrow and the Bengals. Jamar Chase to the Dolphins. Micah Parsons, 7 to the Lions. 8 would be Rashawn Slater to the Panthers. 9, J.C. Horn to the Broncos. And Patrick Surtain, 10th to the Cowboys. So in your scenario, too, you like Jalen Waddle, who I also love. I'm on board with the Jalen Waddle selection simply because I like to diversify my football player's skill sets. I don't like to have too many guys that kind of do the same thing.
Absolutely.
I think Devontae Smith can end up ultimately being a wide receiver 1 standalone. But the thing about Jalen Waddle, and I'm going to say this on the podcast too, I hate the Tyreek Hill comparison. All right. Everybody's saying Tyreek Hill because of the speed. I think it's a lazy argument. I'll be honest. I think he plays more like Odell than he does Tyreek Hill.
Oh, God. You just riled the masses. Now everybody's going to be a Waddle fan.
He does, though. He plays bigger than his size. He can go up. He can make contested catches. He will make catches in traffic. I have yet to really see Tyreek Hill do that. The only thing that Tyreek Hill really brings to the table is speed. I think Jaylen Waddle is so much better than that. I hate the Tyreek Hill comparison because I think it's lazy, and I don't think it exactly identifies who Jaylen Waddle is as a wide receiver. I mean, I seen this guy go up and make unbelievable catches. I mean, in traffic, that's not something that you're expecting out of a Tyreek Hill type wide receiver. I'm sorry.
And I think that, too, if – I mean, just the fact that Alabama creates, like, these monsters in football, that if Devonta Smith was not in the mix here, Jaylen Waddle would be one of the most wanted wide receivers in this draft. And, like, just watching the national championship again with college national championship, I was like, the fact that this is the secondary guy, this is the guy that's not the star wide receiver, and I was like, he's this good. Like, I'm glad Devonta Smith's in the draft because
that's how it was. That's how it was before Smith.
He was going to win the Heisman.
Yeah,
before. I mean, the man had more yards in 2020 than he did in 2019, and only played 5 games.
I mean, yes,
he still caught.
Smith's been out on Alabama 3 years. So,
yeah. They both have.
But. Yeah, but Waddle, my point being, Waddle has sized up next to him over three years, and he's been the better guy up until this year. Smith just, obviously broke out.
Coming into the draft, and here's the other thing, too, which I hate. You have a certain kind of big board prior to the end of the college football season. It changes so much and changes dramatically because of pro days and everything else. And I hate that because I think what your big board was prior to the pro days is closer to what it should be. So we've seen guys like Orlando Brown fall in the draft. Gregory Rousseau is going to fall in the draft because of his pro day. These are guys that are going to be a steal. Who are the two wide receivers three wide receivers that people talked about coming into this draft? Right, it was mainly Ja'Marr Chase, Rondell Moore, and Jaylen Waddle. If you want to include Justin Ross in there before the injury at a Clemson, that's fair as well, but he ended up returning back to school. Who was talking about Devontae Smith before the season? No one. I mean, I don't get it. So in terms of that, I still prioritize Jaylen Waddle. Also, I like his skill set. I think he plays bigger than his size as well. So,
well, either way, I still don't see the Giants taking a receiver. So I appreciate all your
sentiments. Fuck off, Tina.
Back to what I said.
So let me ask this question then. Why receiver or offensive line and why? Or if you're in the offensive line camp, why are you taking offensive line over wide receiver? Let's start with Sam.
I mean – I'm going to make the case for both. Is that what we're doing here? Okay. So basically, wide receiver works because of the fact that, we need the help, and to have someone there that's going to be, reliable for Daniel Jones is great. The con there is the fact that we have so many now because of free agency, and we have Kenny Golladay, who was like the best free agent wide receiver on the market, basically, from this past year. With the offensive line, I mean, I would not be upset if we drafted an offensive lineman because of we need the help there. And just the fact that Daniel Jones struggles so much under pressure that he can't connect with these amazing receivers that we do have, it's frustrating to see because I want Daniel Jones to connect, and he's got an amazing arm. People are like, kind of like throw Daniel Jones like into the whatever bucket, but Daniel Jones is a very talented guy. And if he has the time to connect with his receivers, or if a hole opens up and he can take off, that my new nickname for him is Danny Sneakers because of that 87 yard run. I love it. I love watching him play because he's that good. And I think that he has the potential to be really good if he has the time to figure out what to do with the ball, because he is still a young guy. He hasn't learned that quickness yet. So to be honest, I'm kind of convincing myself here that like an offensive lineman would be really great, but there are so many.
And Slater are off the board.
What was that?
even if Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater are off the board, are you still taking offensive line at 11?
Not at that point. At 11, it's like, you know, if the best guys aren't there, then there's no point. And if there are great receivers available, then let's go for it. But
so I guess my question to you is, would you take a Vera Tucker or a Darisaw over Devontae Smith or Jaylen Waddle?
The thing is that I said this earlier, that later on in the draft, there are so many good talents on defense and offensive linemen that are like just as good as these first round guys. So I think that because the receivers are so good in this draft, like the, you know, these top like five guys that we have here are so good. And like I think Murph was saying before, that it is such a heavy quarterback draft that it's working for us with the receivers are going to fall a little bit. I mean, yeah, no, it's probably going to be a receiver and I want it to be a receiver, but later on down the line, if we pick up somebody in the offensive line scheme, I'm okay with that. And I would like to see them working on it, especially after this past season with the offensive line coach going back and forth and back and forth and who's getting fired and who's getting yelled at by Joe Judge and who's coming in. Like, it was so frustrating and like nobody knew what was going on and nobody knew what, you know, it's like, how do you lead when you don't have a like set leader? So it was difficult for the offensive line this past year. I want to see the offensive line do better so that I can see Daniel Jones do better and have all of these weapons that we've gotten for him actually participate. And yeah,
I agree with you. And I've been on that train that I think that an offensive lineman in the second round might be the best bet because of how deep it is. Now, again, you're looking at a guy like maybe Landon Dickerson.
Oh yes.
Can play center.
Yes. Or,
and then if he can play center, then that means that you move Nick Gates to right guard again. You start Will, or if you want Shane Lemieux at the left guard position. Personally, I said even with the signing of Jonathan Harrison, I think that meant that the Giants can move Nick Gates back to guard now, and then you play Harrison at center. So now you got Andrew Thomas, you got Will Hernandez, Harrison, Gates, and then Pert on your offensive line. But
sorry. I really like Matt Pert. I got to
say. I do, too.
I really like him.
I think he has great size, great athleticism. I feel confident starting him at right tackle. I do.
Yep.
A lot of Giants fans missed it. I think it was about a week ago or 2 weeks ago. It came out that he was hurt at the end of the year, and that's why he didn't get those starts over Fleming. So it all makes a lot of sense now because a lot of us were like, why aren't we starting our young guys at the end of the year? I guess he had an ankle injury or something on the leg. So,
real quick, Murph. You know, the other thing which Sam talked about with Danny, I think his arm looked stronger last year. He was getting the ball out a lot faster, and you can hear it on film, especially with no fans in the stands. There was some pop in his passes. So his arm strength in the past has been questioned. I saw no questions with that last year. He was getting the ball out quick, and it was getting to the receivers quick as well. But, Tino, wide receiver, offensive line.
So, yes, I mean, I'll back up why I was saying why we're not going to have a receiver. One, logistically, we just literally in our offense, we don't need one. It's not going to make us better. And even if we got one, it's not going to do anything. With Evan Engram still on the team, his best asset to us is that receiver. So that takes up a spot next to Kenny Golladay, whether he's at the numbers, whether he's not at the numbers. However you want to line him up, he's one of them. So then you throw Sterling in one of those spots, potentially John Ross, maybe Rudolph, maybe whoever the hell else you want to go. If we're going three wide, four wide, another receiver would be great. Just doesn't make sense. And we also wouldn't utilize him. You want him to play right away. I mean, I want him to suit up and be on the team. But at the same time, if we're not going to throw the ball to him or throw him one, two passes a game, what is the point of having him? So that's just my thought on why we wouldn't do it or why it would be a bad idea if we take receiver at this point. I think you're right. I think it would be Vera Tucker if every other lineman's off the board. I was just watching his tape again. It would make sense. I honestly wouldn't hate going like Vera Tucker and then still like a lineman. I wouldn't mind going Dickerson, going Vera Tucker, Dickerson, get the insides big, rotate Will or Lemieux at the other guard position, and then have Pert eventually take over right tackle. Not too far-fetched because I'm still used, you know, I still like tackle or center or guard at that round two spot. But, I mean, I see Lyman, and if it's an edge, man, you guys know I want Parsons. It's tough. I think it's a bad spot to reach on edge. I told you guys probably Quiddy Pay. I think knowing the Giants would probably be Quiddy Pay. I don't love that move, but if I had to pick someone, probably him, maybe someone from Miami, Jalen Phillips. But again, I don't feel comfortable taking an edge at that spot. I think if they're going edge, they should probably move back. But I have no problem them sitting there and taking, you know, their choice at a lineman. But if they go lineman there, I think they could still go lineman in the second round if they take one of the first.
I think if you're looking at edge guys, I think a guy like Rashard Weaver or Patrick Jones out of Pitt later on in a third or fourth round makes a whole lot of sense also. I think they're going to go a little bit higher just because there's not a whole lot of depth at the edge position where you have a lot of talent. Jalen Phillips might even fall to the second round because of the concerns, because of his injury history and concussions as well. But, Tino, I did say fans would hate me if I was a Giants GM because I would draft offensive line every single year, continue to rotate it.
So literally, you're telling me that wouldn't fix all our problems. And that literally provides insurance, even if Vera Tucker, who probably he's an in-between anyways, if he doesn't fully pan out, you're going back-to-back. And it at least helps the inside of the trenches, which we've explained several times on the show is the issue. I mean, that's my problem. We got to fix the three spots.
A lot of people forget that Will Hernandez is playing on the last year of his deal as well. So anybody that you do draft could potentially replace him at the guard position. So
it's like, Murph, you know, I know tackle is a spot there. Murph, feel free to jump in. But tackle is probably what you're drafting there. But whoever is most eligible to play guard is probably the guy we're going to end up taking. So if it's Vera Tucker, it's probably Vera Tucker. But whoever's qualified to play guard, I think, would probably be my pick at 11.
Well, my motive has always been protect the king, right? That's been the show's motive since the beginning of offseason last year. So always protect Danny. I just don't think the two are going to be there that we want to be targeting. I'll admit, I don't know a lot about Vera Tucker. I've seen some small stuff on him. Can he play on the left side of the line as a guard? Honestly, Tino, I want you to answer this. What did he play in college? Right tackle?
Actually, the tape I'm watching is him at Notre Dame, and he's playing left guard. So that's why I was just like a quick yes.
So he is playing. Yeah. And he moved around quite a bit there, right?
Yeah, his tape on this says left tackle, left guard. So
I don't love taking a guard at 11, but if they feel like that's what we want to do, that's what we want to do. But then I look at guys like Nick Gates that we got undrafted. And we have Mr. Hog Molly himself, supposedly. So
Murph, I'm going to throw this question back out at you. So at 11, who's the best player available? Is it Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, or is it Vera Tucker?
In my opinion, it's Devontae Smith for this team. And I love Waddle. You know, now that we're talking about this, I'm going to put my whole day into Tucker tomorrow, but because I did Quiddy Pay today. But I like Quiddy Pay, man. I really do. You didn't mention him. Quiddy Pay feels like a Leonard Williams to me. He feels like a guy that can't get to the quarterback, but can do everything else.
He feels like a Giants move too. Like that's the thing.
Not going to complain. I mean, y'all know I want Barmore and he's a similar player to Pay. I think Barmore's better, but to me, they're both disruptors. They're not DNs. They're not edge rushers. They're disruptors. But
so my biggest problem with Quiddy Pay though is, and we talked about,
hold on the Quiddy Pay part. Back to your question. Cause I do want to talk Quiddy. I think Devontae fits this team the best because, like you said to me on the phone earlier, Mage, if we need someone to slot into a wide receiver one role, it's probably going to be Devontae over Waddle. Waddle's going to be a guy that's going to burn you on the inside and do a lot from that and a lot from a route running perspective. But Devontae Smith might be a rail, and I was the first one to bash him on his size. Dude plays way bigger than his size. He's never going to get bigger down low, but he can get bigger up top. He's not as small as the internet makes him out to be. He plays a lot bigger than that.
I think he needs to. He's shifty.
He's shifty.
It's the same thing with Lamar Jackson, right? Everybody's like, oh, well, if the defenses get a hold of Lamar Jackson, well, you got to get a hold of Lamar Jackson first.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Devontae Smith. He's shifty, man. He can take a ball underneath and, you know, elude defenders. So I'm not worried about it as well.
Well, I'm going to keep sticking to my from here on out, 2 weeks to go to the draft. My big four are the two Bama boys. Well, three Bama boys, Smith, Waddle, Pay, and Barmore. Those are the guys I want at 11 if the two top O-line are gone.
Murph, this is just my question to you. And I mean to, like, you know, troll the wide receiver takes because I was a believer in that too. But, like, this is my disbelief in the team. It's offensively in Jason Garrett. So, like, in your heart of hearts, you think if we take a receiver, like, what's the outlook on it from there? Like do you think like you'll be able to make an impact this season, like, regardless of who it is?
You're fucking better, or we're in some deep shit.
But, Joe, like, I can assure that we're in
Joe
a situation.
Joe Judge brought in
18 assists
for Jason Garrett, though, yeah. Tino.
Again. I don't even want. Don't piss me off.
18 assistants, but not
Tino,
one coach.
Don't piss me off. We're not talking about Jason Garrett.
I, listen, but it's the reason. I'm telling you, that's the bottom line. That's why I told myself on this.
You're good. But I just can't think like that, knowing that the two biggest areas of improvement are O-line and wide receiver.
There is a reason that the Giants have assembled the deepest coaching staff in the NFL. The Giants have more coaches than any other team in the NFL. This is the most coaches that the Giants have ever had on their team in the history since 1925. There's a reason for that. So there are going to be multiple coaches at the offensive line position, and it's going to be multiple coaches for the offense as well.
We got a run game coordinator. We got an offensive or a pass game coordinator. They just have fancy titles. We just don't see it like that.
Also, I want to give Mr. Chris 172 some credit, too, because he also said that the difference between Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle, Devontae Smith has a higher floor. Jaylen Waddle has a higher ceiling. So, and I do agree with that.
That's a good way of putting it.
This podcast is actually running a little bit longer. Sam, this is what you do to us. You bring so much good stuff to the table. So just real quick, let's get into it. Parsons, does it worry you? Yes or no?
The thing with Parsons is I was reading an article about him recently, and someone said he has the same high maintenance to him as OBJ did. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know if it's worth it to go through that all over again because, well, to be fair, we have different coach now. You know, I feel like if OBJ was on Joe Judge's roster, things would have panned out very differently. So I guess maybe he could, but like, I really don't want to deal with some high maintenance young kid that just comes in here and starts running things left and right. Could we use him? Absolutely. Is he a great talent? Yes. But I feel like they're, you know, I don't know. The thing with the high maintenance guys is like, is it worth it? Does their talent outweigh the amount of headache that they're probably going to bring?
Are you worried about the hazing allegations?
Yeah. I mean, again, this is like all this stuff that's going on. Like, is that going to come to our team? And this team is very different than it was in the past with Joe Judge at the helm here. This is a no-nonsense team. I don't want someone with hazing allegations to come out here and you know, come on this team. So, does the talent outweigh the risk? And I just don't want to deal with that.
I'm not getting burned on a first-round pick again, man.
Well, the other thing that our boy Rich Pick always brings up is that Ghost Mandos is in the NFL. He was also in that allegation, the hazing allegation as well. Nothing's been brought. He's still playing.
I honestly don't believe the hazing allegations. That doesn't faze me at all. It's more like the character concerns as far as being.
So you're with Sam in terms of you don't want the additional diva.
Yeah, I don't want the bullshit, man. I just don't want the bullshit. Like, we've been burned on too many first-round picks. I mean, some could say that out of the last 7 picks, 5 of them have been pretty questionable. And we've been burned too many times. I just don't want this shit. Don't want it. But like we've said all along, our coaching staff will know better than anyone else. So if that's the pick, that's the pick. Personally, if that news that they say is going to drop doesn't drop, I think he's gone before 11. If it drops, he might be there at 11.
If he's there at 11, we're taking him. No doubt.
You know, you've been on the Parsons train for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him since last year. I wanted him to take him last year in the draft. I was like, yeah, if he comes out, we should fucking take him. And then he opted out this year. I mean, I thought it was only going to plead his case better. Plus, we signed Chaos. I thought, you know, everything lined up. And then you see how giddy they were at his pro day. So, I think if he's there, the Giants are licking their chops and they're taking him, no question. That's the ideal pick for me. If not, everyone else is kind of, we're going to have to do some homework on and kind of take best available, like to our standards of, and I think Mays, you hit it on the head. It's like best player available with the need. I don't know how you worded it, but it's like need plus positional value. It's a whole fucking thing. But I do think like in terms of potentially drafting a corner there, I think I could kind of check that out in my head. I don't think it'd be corner. Receiver still has a shot. I don't think that helps us though. And yeah, man, I just hope we don't fuck it up. I also think Judge doesn't want to draft a receiver because he can't control like what Garrett's going to do. So that's why I think, you know, I think there's a chance Judge takes control of the pick and we go defense or offensive line.
You know, I just hate it that you are so hurt, man. I can honestly feel your pain.
The offense.
When we bring up Jason Garrett or Evan Engram on this podcast, honestly, it's just.
You go through a season or two and you average 19 points a game, you know, all hope is out the window. We can't average 3 touchdowns. Literally, all last year, all I had to say was, if we can get to 24, we have a really good chance today. 24! It's not that difficult. It shouldn't be that difficult. 24. With this defense, if we address defense in the first round, 24, Jason. For the love of God. Average 22 or 23. But it's not that hard. More than 21, we win.
You should do like one of those Sarah McLachlan like infomercials and get people to sponsor your therapy.
There's no helping me at this point. Until he's gone, I'm in too deep. Then the fact that you're just like, yeah, well, we hired more assistants. It's like, that's worse. It's literally worse that we're hiring more assistants. We're addressing there's a problem without addressing the problem. That's concerning.
It's not worse. It's just telling Jason that he's on a fucking hot seat.
He just should have been gone. He should have been.
Well, he should have, but we all know the story behind that. He's a Mara favorite.
And I know deep down, though, you know I'm right with Evan Engram. We won't draft a receiver because he has to fucking play receiver this year. You know for a fact it's like a DH on the Yankees. He has to play receiver or he has zero value.
Glad you brought that value up. Glad you brought that up. No wide receiver at 11. Totally fucking agree. There's nothing for him to do here besides play wide receiver.
But this is the problem this is the problem that I had with Kyle Pitts being converted to wide receiver is that he's not a great route runner. What are you going to do? Stick him outside and expect him to burn a corner?
Evan Engram isn't great at anything.
I would rather Pitts.
I appreciate you picking up your mic to get closer for that.
I would rather pitch shitty routes than Engram doing what he does, get open, and then just drop the fucking ball blatantly. Literally, that means nothing to me. DK was the worst route runner in his class. He was shitted on the most, but he can go up and get a ball. So I'm fine.
Put him outside with a fucking contested catch rate at less than 50%. Actually, I'm not even sure if his regular catch rate is 50%. You put him outside where you're expecting him to catch the ball. The one thing that he hasn't fucking done the last two seasons. I mean,
listen, I'm worried that the more things are changing, the more they're going to stay the same on offense. And I can't afford that for Danny. And it's scaring the shit out of me, guys.
Well, you know what? Fuck you.
Shit out of me.
Okay? Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, that'll answer all our fucking problems.
As much as you want to say that about Danny, he could throw eight last year? He could throw 5 this year. He's still coming back, so it doesn't matter.
I hope so. He better, I swear to God, if he has like 10 touchdowns, freaking 12 games into the season again, even more, I'm going to lose my mind. That is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He had like 2,000 passing yards. Oh, my God. It's embarrassing. You guys aren't embarrassed?
Regardless of how Daniel Jones plays this year, I know I've said this on the podcast, he's back. I don't care how he plays this year. The Giants are in love with that guy. He is this guy's franchise quarterback. He's going to be the quarterback for the next 10 years.
Tino needs a little lesson here.
Let's see it.
Evan Engram,
I hope so.
Evan Engram, Jason Garrett, and Daniel Jones all have something in common.
They're not going.
What is it?
they're all going to be gone by next year.
No, they're all fucking tied to Mara at the hip. Ain't going nowhere.
I disagree about Engram. No, sorry.
Well, okay. Hold on. Backing up. We knew. I've been saying for how long that he was going to finish this damn contract. I've said it the whole time. I wanted him cut, but I knew for a fact deep down that Evan Engram was coming back regardless because Evan Engram is a team favorite.
Watching Daniel Jones in this offense, this is the analogy I had in my head. I feel as if, like, I'm a parent at Little League, right? And you know how there's always the one dad who yells at his kid and, like, is way too hard on him? And you, like, you feel like you should say something, but you don't. I'm just watching Danny just, like, just be belittled and just misused. And, like, it's not fair to him. And I want to step in and intervene and just say, come here. Like, it's okay, but we can't. He's trapped with Jason Garrett, who's going to doom him and just ruin his life, and he's going to be crippled at the hip. He's too young for this shit. He's like 23. If he was a veteran, have fun, Jason. He's a baby. He's a child in this league, and he's fucking ruining him. He's ruining him.
Can we just get to the draft, please, man? Like,
wait, you're already
getting me all triggered.
You guys really think that if Daniel Jones completely tanks this season, he's going to be around?
100%. Yes. 100,000%. Really? And that's not even me being a Daniel Jones fan.
I don't know.
Murph is actually onto something about John Mara. When John Mara loves a person, not even as a player or coach, because obviously we see how triggered Tino is with Jason Garrett. But when John Mara loves a person, they have a job for life. They have a job for life. And not only that, too, I think the other thing is 2019 was unbelievable for Danny. Unbelievable. 2020 was a whole nother shit show. And with Saquon back, I think that Danny's going to perform better, but I don't think that Danny's going anywhere. I think that Danny's going to be here for the next 10-plus years.
Okay.
I think Mara had a lot to say in that number six decision. And Mara lives and breathes off pride. And he did it with Eli for too long. And they took so long to fill that position. Us fans were asking for years. Even if he's wrong, he will never admit it. Danny will play his contract out with the Giants, in my opinion. He has to have some really, really bad seasons for the next 2 years. Like, I'm talking worst quarterback in the NFL for the next 2 years for him to be gone, in my opinion. It's just the way the Giants operate.
If he has two terrible years, I don't care, because I still know it's not his fault. It is not his fault. And if he's fucked up and he doesn't amount to anything, we will circle back to this on this podcast in 5 years. And I'm going to call Jason Garrett, and we're going to have a long talk. We're going to have a long fucking talk, because I'm worried. I'm worried, guys. That's that. Okay. But on that note,
have you seen the pictures of Daniel Jones recently? His swag it's got to be like a 10.
100.
I don't know what it is with that picture of him with the hat on.
Oh, you saw
fantastic picture. Yeah, with Will. Fantastic.
With the lip. He's doing the lip.
Oh my God.
Yeah, with Will.
Is that new?
I saw it today.
I thought that was from when they went out raging and got all.
Honestly, it doesn't look anything like him, though. But
I didn't even know it was him until someone said, "This is Daniel Jones," and I was like, "Oh my God!"
Well, and you found a new screensaver for your watch.
And actually, yeah. I can't stop as amazing right as like I can't stop. But that makes me bring up another point about Danny. Everyone loves the kid, man. And if you love the kid in New York, you're going to stick around. The media likes him and the team likes him. But.
All right. So that's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Sam, thank you again for coming on. Please tell everybody one more time where they can find you.
So you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TGWTS Podcast. I am the girl who talks sports. You can find me on all podcasting platforms and on YouTube. So wherever you get your podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, we are there. Subscribe, leave a review, all that good stuff. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are like moments away from hitting 100 subscribers. So I'm super stoked. So make sure that you guys check that out. And on the YouTube channel too, I post all of the podcasts, but I also post like extra content. So, you know, I post like stupid videos with different games and stuff like that, and I have some things planned for the draft and whatnot, so it's gonna be a fun time.
You know, we might have to have her on for the Yankees Mets Subway Series.
I think that's a really good idea.
I'd love that.
Where's my invite?
Don't worry about it, you know.
Now you're making it on.
Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Peace and love, everyone.